exactly know what it is, but okay. My name is Katie Fairbanks with the University of Montana, and I'm interviewing Bart Bauer today on November 11th, 2014, in the Journalism Building at the University of Montana.
My name is Bart Allen Bauer, U.S. Navy retired as a chief in the United States Navy.
So I'd just like to start with asking you, what made you want to join the Navy?
I joined the Navy for a variety of reasons, but the driving one was basically patriotism. You know, I wanted to serve my country and all that kind of stuff, but I was pretty young and naive. And another motivating factor was my parents didn't really have money for school. So it was a way to get out of a small town and basically see the world.
So where are you from? What's the small town?
Well, I was born here in Missoula, but my folks moved to Colstrip, Montana, which has a population of about 2,000, depending on the mine there. So it was a small town, and my graduating class was about 98 people, so kind of small.
So you started out on the USS Constellation, and I saw that was just an aircraft carrier. And so what were those? I know you had to go through basic training. What was your first day or your first week like on the Constellation? Do you remember?
My real introduction to the Navy was kind of showed how green I was and how naive I was. I did A school and I did my apprenticeship training. And then my first duty assignment, like you said, was the USS Constellation. It's an aircraft carrier that was just recently decommissioned. Conventional carrier, non-nuclear. And at the time, it was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, undergoing what they called at the time, SLEP, Service Life Extension Program. They basically overhauling the ship. So they flew me from San Diego, which is where my boot camp was, to Philadelphia. I get off the plane. It's 10, 11 o'clock at night. It's dark. I don't really know what I'm doing. So I get a cab. It takes me down to the shipyard. I go through a bunch of gates, you know, this kind of stuff. I'm kind of tired. I'm kind of out of it a little bit. And I meet this young petty officer who's on the watch. He takes my information, says, okay, your sponsor will be down here in a little bit. Why don't you can either wait here or wait outside. So I walked outside, and I'm standing there, and the guy comes out and starts chit-chatting and stuff. And I'm like, so where's the ship? And he kind of looks at me like, are you joking with me? Are you real? He kind of looks over his shoulder, and we're standing right next to the ship. This thing was so massive that I had no comprehension that it was a ship. It was probably 10, 12 stories high, and it was dark. So I'm just kind of looking at here going, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into? That was my first day in the Navy, really.
Wow. All right, so you have a pretty long term of service in the Navy. So when you first went, when you were first, deployed to Iraq, how was that? How did you feel?
My first deployment to Iraq was a lot of excitement, a little bit of hesitation, and a little bit of fear too, but the most part, I was the senior man for a six-man team. Well, it was four guys and two girls. I was part of Combat Camera Group Pacific in San Diego. So they sent us over there. I was an E6 at the time, and I was in charge of five other people. That first tour in Iraq was one of the most rewarding tours in my entire career, both mentally and career-wise. So there was a lot of worrying about what I should be doing, not necessarily for what I should be doing right, but making sure that I took care of those guys, because these were people that I knew, saw on a daily basis. We hung out together, you know, during working hours, after working hours, that kind of stuff. I knew their families, I knew their kids, all that kind of stuff. So I really wanted to make sure that I did the right things by their standards.
Are you still in touch with them?
Yeah, I am. In fact, two of them came to my retirement just a few months ago. So, yeah, it's great running into old friends like that. You know, and we still keep in touch, not as much as we probably should, but, you know, there's always Facebook and emails and the constant, you know, little IMs and stuff back and forth. So, yeah, we stay in touch pretty regularly.
Nice. So, how did you get into the combat camera group? Because that's something different that I've never heard of before.
I got into combat camera kind of the right place at the wrong time kind of thing. When I joined the Navy, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And then at the last minute, I was like, well, you know, I kind of like to draw. I want to be an artist. And I heard the Navy has artists. And they're like, yeah, good luck. We got this other job, photography. It's kind of like that. And I came up for orders. Every 4 years, you come up for orders usually, 4 or 5 years. And I saw this group up there. It's called, you know, Expedition Combat Camera. Or, sorry, not Expedition. It's Combat Camera Group Pacific. And I applied, and I went up, and I talked to their senior enlisted at the time, said, hey, this is the skill set that I have. I think I can really help you guys out. And a couple months later, I got the call and said, hey, this is where you're going.
So, how has that, what are you doing now that you're retired? Are you kind of just, you've come back to Missoula, and do you have, has your camera experience kind of translated to your life now, or what are your plans?
How has my military life transitioned into my civilian life? Well, I'm still kind of going through that transitional phase right now. I retired officially the last day of July, so I've only been in Missoula here for a couple of months, and currently I'm enrolled in the university here, and I'm pursuing my degree in wildlife biology. I always have my camera. My wife's into photography as well, so that dabbles a little bit. Montana's a great place to do that photography-wise. Plus, there's, you know, hunting and fishing, which has its aspects in the military as well.
All right, so let's kind of go back a little bit. So did you, when you were over in Iraq, and then I think it said Bahrain?
Bahrain, yeah.
Did you come into contact with a lot of civilians over there?
Yeah, when we were deployed to Iraq, we were deployed to a forward operating base, a small military base. And then we would go, me and my partner, we would deploy in two-man teams from that six-man unit. We would deploy with other military units, and we were out with the civilian populace almost every day.
And how was that? Like, how did they treat you?
The civilian population in Iraq treated us for the most part they weren't hostile to us. They weren't openly friendly to us. They're more tolerant of us than anything else. And then as they saw us coming back day after day, day after day, they started to build rapport with certain members of the teams. There was always a few people that were a little standoffish, you were a little suspicious of. But for the most part, they were a fairly welcoming population.
Do you have any specific, did you have any specific interactions with someone over there that kind of stands out to you, or do you remember any specific days that were different than others?
I don't have any, like, friendships or anything that I developed with civilians over there. But certain days do stand out. The days that we saw children running around, you know, throwing rocks at us and trying to give us, you know, trying to get stuff from us, those were the days where you knew the chances of something happening were very low. It was those days where we'd roll into the same neighborhood where we'd see, you know, 30 kids when there's no one out, no kids. Not, those are the days you kind of made the hair on the back of your neck stand up. And luckily for us, nothing really major happened. So.
And I know you said you were kind of young and naive when you first entered the Navy. So how did your expectations of being in the Navy, how did those compare with what you experienced?
How did my expectations of being in the Navy, how did those basically translate into what actually happened? Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of had the expectations of what you see on TV, you know, sailors in foreign ports and, you know, grass skirts and drinks and that kind of stuff. And my first 4 years in the Navy, all I saw was Philadelphia, you know, so I was kind of disheartened and I kind of had a bad attitude. And because of my own lack of planning, I didn't have an exit strategy. So when my time came for me to get out or re-enlist, I didn't have a game plan to get out. So I re-enlisted. And I got orders to Hawaii to a joint intelligence center over there. And that ended up being one of the best tours of my life, you know. Hawaii was a great place. I got to interact with the Air Force, a little bit of the Marines. And that was kind of more what I expected from the Navy, you know, traveling places, getting to interact with other people, do a lot of different stuff. So my first tour was kind of like working in a factory almost. My second tour was kind of like being in the Navy.
So when you first went over to the Navy, and you know, throughout your whole term in the Navy, did you get letters from your parents at first when you were in Philadelphia? Were you homesick, or how did that go?
Oh, definitely. I got letters when I was in boot camp. You know, this was before email and all that kind of stuff. So I got letters from my parents and from my siblings and from my girlfriend, and that really was helpful, but it was really hard too, because it made you homesick, made you think about all the things that you gave up to join the Navy, and you knew that you weren't going to be able to get back to that for, you know, several years at least. So it was really helpful at times, but then it was also hard because you were very homesick sometimes.
How many siblings do you have? Are they younger or older?
I am the oldest of six brothers and sisters. I have two brothers, and then I have three younger sisters. So the youngest brother and the oldest sister are twins. So I'm the oldest of six, and for the most part, we're all still pretty much in touch. That's good.
Did any of them join the military at all?
No, I'm the only one in my immediate family, and I'm the only one that I know of in our family line that's joined the military, with the exception of my grandfather. He was in the Army.
Let's see here. So how about your last day? Like your last day in Iraq for the last time, how was that?
My last day in Iraq was, it was excitement. Because, you know, you're counting down the days, you know, 10 days in a wake up, 9 days in a wake up. And then that day finally comes. Your relief has already come. You've already trained him up on how to do what you've been doing. And you start to say goodbye to all those people that you've met over there, all those friends that you've made. So it's kind of bittersweet. You're excited to get home to all the things that you've missed, your family, your friends, your normal life, you know, your favorite restaurant, your favorite hangout, that kind of stuff. But at the same time, you know, you're leaving all these people that they will go home eventually, but they're not going home when you are. So they're happy to see you go, but at the same time, now they like to switch places with you. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of things that you left that you weren't able to finish up, you know. Sometimes I wish I could have stayed a little longer, you know, done a little bit more. Well, you know, say hindsight is always 20/20, but it's always an exciting day when that time comes for you to leave. there's always some reservations when it comes to leaving.
So was there something, some specific restaurant or some specific thing that you were excited to come back and eat? Did you want to have a burger or is there anything like that?
What I missed most when I was over there was, at the time I was stationed in San Diego, and they have really good Mexican food. You know, everybody's got their favorite little place, and we had ours. You know, we have this little Mexican place on Coronado Island. It's on a side street. It's just a little door. It says takeout. You walk inside, and it's probably 10 feet square. You order your food, and then you get out. And they've got some of the best Mexican, you know, around. And that's one of the first places I went when I got back was there. That was one of the things I missed. But the biggest thing I missed was peace and quiet. You know, because when you're over there, you're always with somebody else. You're rooming with somebody else. You're working with somebody else. You're there 24/7. There's always stuff going on. There's no peace and quiet. There's no calm. So that was probably the biggest thing I missed was peace and quiet.
Was there anything you tried to do when you were over there to get some peace and quiet?
Times, yeah, you would try to get some peace and quiet, but, you know, there's always something going on. Drills, alarms, you know, the sounds of gunfire and that kind of stuff. Even though it's off in the distance a lot of times, you still hear it. And after a while, it kind of becomes numb, but there's no peace and quiet. They have, like, little areas where you can go and unwind, called MWR, Military Welfare and Recreation. So there's, like, pool tables and, like, library books and games and stuff like that. But still, when you're there, there's, you know, a bunch of other soldiers and sailors there with you. So it's not peace and quiet, that kind of stuff. You try to find little spots where you can, if not physically be alone, then you can mentally be alone with your thoughts.
Did you have a spot or a certain activity that you could kind of, that was your kind of escape or where you could kind of get away and be away, be alone with your thoughts?
I guess so. My partner, my videographer when I was over there was John Parker, and he's a huge soccer nut. And it just so happened to be during the World Cup, so he'd be like, hey man, we just, you know, I know we've been out all day, let's go watch the game. I could care less about soccer. So we'd go over there and to the MWR tent and watch soccer, and I would pretend to be interested for a few minutes, and then I would just kind of zone out. So while he was watching the World Cup, you know, that was kind of my personal time.
So I know you've mentioned that a couple of your first tour in Iraq and then your, like when you were stationed in Hawaii were both very rewarding. Was there anything that really stood out as the most exciting thing you got to do because of your joining the Navy?
With the exception of one or two duty assignments, I had a very exciting time in the Navy. I got to spend quite a few years with the SEALs, you know, jumping out of helicopters, blowing stuff up, running around in the ocean, that kind of stuff. I got to spend some time in Hawaii with beautiful scenery, that kind of stuff around in there. San Diego, some really, really good friends there. The job at San Diego was amazing. There were some really great things, and it's kind of hard to pick one thing. But there was one time where I was just kind of at my desk doing my thing. I was at SEAL Team 5 at the time. I was one of their techs. I had worked up a fairly good relationship with most of those guys, and like I said, I'm at my desk. They come over and like, hey, we're going to go do some cast and recovery. You want to come along and take some pictures? I'm like, yeah, sure. Casters and recovery is where helicopter flies across the water 30 feet or below, and everybody jumps out while the helicopter's moving, and then it comes, swings around, and picks them back up. So after the first cast, they all jump out and they climb back in. They're like, all right, you ready to go? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, yeah, come on, let's go. I had no idea what I was doing, you know, so it was days like that where it was fun. It was exciting. You know, I was like, I can't believe I'm getting paid for this kind of stuff. So it was days like that that were they were pretty cool.
Sounds like it. So how was, or so when you were with the SEALs, how long were you with the SEALs?
I was with SEAL Team 5 for about four and a half years. I left the teams in 2002 to go to Syracuse University. I got picked up for a photojournalism program. But I spent about 4.5 years there.
And so when you were with SEAL Team 5, were you on a boat? Or I'm not quite sure how that... Were you stationed somewhere?
When I was stationed with SEAL Team 5, their headquarters is on Coronado Island in San Diego. So they have their own little base, compound, whatever you want to call it. And from there, they deploy, depending on how they make up. They can deploy individually. They can deploy to teams, squadrons, however they see fit. But while I was stationed at SEAL Team 5, I went to work every day on Coronado Island. And then when we deployed, we deployed. And when we weren't deployed, it was almost like a 9-to-5 job kind of thing. But right there in San Diego.
So it seems like you spent a lot of time in San Diego. So was there any part of you that wanted to stay there even when you retired? Or were you always planning on coming back here? Or how did you end up back in Missoula?
I spent a lot of time in San Diego between the SEAL teams and the Constellation and Combat Camera. I really liked San Diego, but my heart's always been here in Montana. You know, I was born in Missoula. I lived, you know, the first 18 years of my life in Montana. And then I would come back when I had leave. I would come back to Montana, you know. Usually it was around Thanksgiving. I could see my family. I could catch the tail end of hunting season, that kind of stuff. So even though I really liked San Diego, my heart's always been here in Missoula.
So, let's see here. So when you first were first deployed to Iraq, how did you have a certain reaction from your parents or your relatives? How did they feel?
When I called and told my folks that I was going to Iraq, this was in 2006, and things over there were pretty messy, but they weren't as bad as during the initial wave. You know, it's always kind of hard to gauge your parents' reaction over the phone sometimes. Whenever I call my folks, my dad likes to put me on speakerphone so we can hear, you know, I can... my mom was kind of quiet. My dad, you know, he was kind of quiet for a while, and we talked a little bit, and, you know, at the end, you know, he's like, you know, trust in the Lord and keep your head down, pretty much. So a lot of the upbringing that my folks, the way that my folks brought me up, whether they know it or not, really prepared me for the military, I think. My dad's a big, avid outdoorsman. You know, hunting and fishing, and he's involved in church, and he's involved in scouts and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of that plays right into the military, way down to the core level of the military.
So it sounds like you had some values that really transitioned over. Were you a Boy Scout or anything like that? Were you a Boy Scout when you were younger?
Yeah, I was involved in scouts when I was younger, and you really get out of scouts what you put into it, and you can have a good experience or you can have a bad experience, and a lot of it is based on the leadership of the troop or whatever. And my dad was my troop leader for a lot of times, for a lot of those years. And he really pushed it down to the kids and wanted the kids to run the organization. And it was pretty much up to us what we wanted to do. And he was just kind of there to make sure that we didn't hurt ourselves and we didn't bite off more than we could chew. But we had some really great adventures when we were in Scouts because of the leadership and things that they guided us along to do. So it was really great being in Scouts, and it, I think, prepared me for a lot of life's lessons.
So did you have anything like a keepsake or a photo or anything that you had with you when you first went into the Navy, or anything that you kept throughout your service that kind of reminded you of home or anything like that?
You know, you always see these movies where, you know, the guy's got a locket of his best girl or a lock of hair or something like that, you know, and I didn't really have anything like that. Of course, I always got letters from home, you know, that kind of stuff, and I would keep the best letters. But I didn't really keep anything from year to year to year. It was always kind of fleeting, you know, but I knew my parents, my best friend, and my siblings were only a phone call away or a letter away. So in that aspect, it was pretty easy to stay in touch with them and to always stay grounded.
So do you remember it sounds like you had some good times, but do you have a best day in the service?
Do I have a best day in the service? Boy, that's hard to choose, you know. I've had some really great days, you know. I think the best day was when I found out that, when I was actually pinned to Chief Petty Officer. In the Navy, that's a pretty big milestone in your enlisted career. But I had gone through 8 weeks of chief training, as you call it, whatever they call this here. But the best part was the fact that when you actually get your rank pinned on, you get one on each collar and you get a new hat device. And the best part was the fact that my dad and my mom came down from Billings, they live in Billings now, to San Diego, and my dad was able to pin on one of my chief's anchors. I think that was probably one of the best days in the Navy.
So, how was basic training for you? Did you have any really strict instructors, or was it kind of a shock after the first few days?
You know, I had envisions of basic training of, you know, full metal jacket, you know, the hard as nails drill instructor, you know, that kind of stuff. And, the first couple weeks of basic training are kind of a blur. You're kind of sleep deprived and not really know what's going on, but there was a lot of attention to detail. Make sure you follow these set of rules to the letter, that kind of stuff. It wasn't physically demanding like I expected, you know, crawling over cargo nets and mud and that kind of stuff. Maybe if I'd joined the Army or the Marine Corps, I might have got that, but the Navy, I guess there's not a lot of barbed wire on ships. So for the Navy boot camp, the biggest thing for me was, kind of monotonous. When they gave you a task, it had to be done to the letter, exactly how it was. No cutting corners, no, you know, trying to take a shortcut kind of thing. So in that aspect, I think they were really preparing you to go out into the fleet and what was expected from you in the real Navy. But there was a lot of lot of following the rules, a lot of marching, a lot of cleaning, a lot of folding clothes, that kind of stuff. But it's always funny because one of the things I always tell people that I learned in boot camp was how to sleep standing up. You know, there'd be times where there's a lot of standing around waiting, and you didn't get a lot of sleep the night before, or the night before, or the night before that. So it was fairly common for people to fall asleep while they were standing in line, you know, going to the chow hall, going to, you know, whatever class of instruction we were supposed to go. So, yeah, it was kind of funny to actually realize that you were falling asleep on your feet. It was kind of funny.
How did do you have anything specific that you kind of that translated from basic to your actual time in the Navy, or was it kind of like very different or anything?
So how did basic training prepare me for the real Navy? Mm-hmm. Well, they definitely gave you the groundwork, the foundation, you know, the structure and the protocol and rank and the pecking order, that kind of stuff. But I didn't really see a whole lot of that until my second tour. My first tour was in the shipyard in Philadelphia, and it was, you know, a lot of chipping paint, a lot of grinding, you know, that kind of stuff. So it wasn't really, it was almost like doing factory work as vice being in the military. It wasn't until I got to my second tour that I actually saw what the Navy was, and a lot of those things kind of clicked from boot camp.
How did those things or your time in your first couple tours translate to being in combat?
How did the things I learned from my first couple tours translate into combat? Relying on the guy next to you and going through the same training that they did, seeing how they performed during that training, them being able to see how you performed during that training, and knowing that you could count on that person. We trained enough together that if something happened, I could know what he was going to do, you know, and he would know what I would do. And then also knowing that we weren't out there by ourselves. There was multiple layers of command and control, multiple layers of overwatch, and multiple layers of protection. So it wasn't just, you know, Bart Bauer out there with his little M16, you know. You had the squad with you, you had the elements out there, you had base, you had, you know, all this other stuff. So it was reassuring to know that you had that kind of support and backup. But in the end, it always boiled down to me and John Parker, or me and whoever else it was from our unit that were out there. Because combat camera is a unique element, as we're so small that when we go forward, we embed or attach to another unit. So we're these, you know, one or two guys that you don't know from Adam that are assigned to your unit at the last minute. So, of course, when something goes south, we're always going to rely on each other first. So it was always nice to know that he was ready to go as I was.
Do you remember a specific time where you really just felt like you didn't have backup, it was just you and him?
So it was July or August. We were in Iraq. It was hotter than the dickens. We've got all this body armor on, you know, we've got our weapons, we've got our cameras, that kind of stuff. And we've been out there all day, so we're, you know, we're done, we're tired, we're ready to go. And we've got one more neighborhood to go through. And we're out there doing our stuff, and we had linked up previously with an Iraqi unit. So John and I had been covering the U.S. side of it for quite a while. So for the past day or so, we had been trying to get more Iraqis involvement. And I remember one time looking up and noticing that I was the only American as far as I could see. And that was a little bit of a reality check, you know. I quickly kind of searched around and found John, and I was like, you know, we better get back to the home bees. Because I would hate for them to take off and leave, you know. That would have been a bad deal.
So how was it different being in the combat camera, trying to take photos while you were in these situations? Did you have different worries? Were you ever worried about your camera or anything like that? Just kind of.
So how was being in combat camera different than being a regular sailor or a regular soldier? I always used to tell the Army guys, you know, hey, we've got our cameras, we've got our guns. If you see one of us shooting our weapon, then we know something really bad has happened. Our primary job was to document what was going on with our cameras. And we didn't really worry about breaking our cameras. Yes, we had a lot of money invested in those, but cameras can be replaced. Body parts, fingers, toes can't be replaced. So if stuff got damaged, and it did quite often, it wasn't a big deal. But with that camera, it kind of gave us a false sense of security, because you're looking through the viewfinder quite a bit, and there's a very real chance that you can get disassociated with what's actually going on. Desensitized is not really the word, but it's pretty close. Because you're looking through a viewfinder, it's almost like it's on a monitor or a screen, and if you're not careful, you can kind of get sucked into that moment. And thinking that camera can protect you somehow. But you really need to be mindful of what's going on around you and not get sucked into that viewfinder. Because I know as photographers and videographers over there, it was a golden opportunity to actually get something that wasn't training. Before the war started, all we would do would go to these exercises, go to these training evolutions, and take pictures and videography of that stuff. And it was like you're training and training and training, and you never actually got to play in the game. So it's unfortunate that the war started, but when it did, it was time for us to actually play in the game. We got to go over there and do what we'd been trained to do. So it was really hard not to get sucked into that moment that you're looking for through that viewfinder. And you always had to be mindful of what was going on. There are multiple occasions where, you know, it would easily lead to bad situations because you weren't paying attention to what was going on. One of my buddies got left because he was, you know, focusing on what he was trying to capture, and the unit left him. He's out there in the middle of Baghdad by himself, and just so happened that he was able to flag down another U.S. convoy going by, and they picked him up. And the unit that he was with didn't even realize he wasn't there until they got back to the FOB. So I always tried to be mindful of where my partner was, where the U.S. guys were at. And, you know, there was times where I was oblivious to where they were at and that kind of stuff. So I was really lucky in a lot of sense to not get into any situations that were worse than what they actually were.
So was there a specific time that you remember where you kind of got sucked in and something, would something happen that kind of snapped you out of it and you looked around and no one was there, or?
Yeah, there was a time we were in Sadr City, and that was notorious for not being a very U.S. friendly place. And we were with an Iraqi unit, There was a few U.S. military there as well. But I was going through a different... I was trying to change up the way I was looking at the scene because we'd been there for a while. Everything started looking the same to me. So I was always trying to think black and white, black and white, black and white, trying to change things up a little bit. And there was one picture where I took, and the Iraqis were marching into this compound. It's kind of like an apartment complex. And it wasn't until I was, 10, 15 minutes into it that I realized that I had no idea where the U.S. forces were at. We were surrounded by this apartment complex where they really didn't like us to begin with. The Iraqi military was not very friendly to their own population. So the local population probably hated them more than they hated us. And I was there kind of, me and John. And I was like, holy cow, we got to get out of here. So it took us a while to find some U.S. forces. Probably not the smartest move on our part. But it was all because I kind of got sucked into trying to look at something new. The same thing in a different way.
So how did you... So you were... You went to the school in Syracuse before? I'm sorry, I think I've got your timeline a little bit confused. So did you go to the school in Syracuse before you joined Combat Camera the first time?
Yes.
Okay.
So I went from SEAL Team 5 to Syracuse University through the Military Photojournalism Program, and from there I went to Combat Camera in San Diego.
So how was kind of going from SEAL Team 5 to school in Syracuse?
It was really great because I'd come from the teams and it was a bunch of A personalities with unlimited funding, unlimited budgets, cool toys. They got to do all this kind of stuff. And then I went to school, and at the school there, it was it's a huge journalism school, great instructors and all that kind of stuff. And then we were put together with only military people. So we had some Marines, we had some Navy, we had some Air Force. And so we had that commonality between us. And we had all of our classes together. There was like two or three classes where we had class with the regular student body, but for the most part it was just us. And when you don't have to worry about books, and you don't have to worry about tuition, and you don't have to worry about a paycheck, it's kind of cool. But that school was not easy. I had to have a tutor for a good chunk of it to get through the writing portion. So I would definitely say that the military got their money's worth out of that. But going to school was a really great experience. Got to meet some outstanding professors, some top-notch professionals in the photography business, one-on-one workshops with those guys, and some mentors that I still in touch with today that basically shaped how I take photographs. Before Syracuse, I was one of those push here dummies, What does the P stand for on your camera? Yeah, push here dummy. That was me, So I had no idea really what I was doing before Syracuse. And those instructors and those mentors that really shaped how I see things.
So, let's see here. For a second. So, let's see here. Thought I had. So, when you retired, did you just decide it was time for you to be done, or what was there anything that made you decide to retire now?
There's a lot of people say, when it's time for you to retire, you'll know. Because I was asking a lot of people. I was coming up 16, 17 years in the military, and it's like, how did you guys know when it was time to get out? And they're like, oh, you'll know. And about my 19th year, I was like, you know, I'm about ready to retire. You know, it's not like the good old days kind of thing, you know. Things change, and you kind of get set in your ways. So around my 19th year, I started thinking about, well, maybe it's time for me to retire. And then I went over 20, thinking, oh, it's going to be easy because, you know, I can retire any time after that. Once I hit my 20-year mark, it was actually harder because I knew I had that option to get out. You know, if I was having a bad day or if I was having a bad week or a month or something like that, I could say, you know what, here's my papers, I want to retire. But I was right at 22, and I was really seriously thinking about getting out, 22 years in service. And this I was like, well, let me see what the next duty station would be, and that will determine whether I get out or not. Because I'm not going to go to some place that I'm going to be miserable, some place that is not going to allow me to think about my next step. And my last tour was Expeditionary Combat Camera on the East Coast. Like, oh, okay, I've done the West Coast. Let me see what the East Coast is about. So I decided to do my last two tours there, or my last 2 years there, and I'm glad that I did.
So how was doing the tour on the East Coast different than the West Coast?
There's two combat camera units in the Navy, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast. And they're not real big units to begin with, so there's only about 45, 50 people per unit. So there's a lot of almost sibling rivalry between us. And there's not too many people that go from one coast to the other coast. So on the West Coast, everybody's like, oh, those East Coast guys are so uptight. You know, it's because they're so close to the White House, da-da-da-da-da. And on the East Coast, they're like, oh, you guys on the West Coast, you're just a bunch of surfer dudes and all that kind of stuff. So it was kind of fun showing up as, you know, the West Coast guy, you know. Oh, you're too laid back. Oh, you're, you know, this and that. And so it was kind of fun to have that rivalry. But we already knew, or I had already worked with people that were there. So in a sense, it was kind of like, you know, just kidding your brothers and sisters. It was a different mentality, yeah. East Coast, West Coast. East Coast is a little more formal, maybe. West Coast is a little more about, you know, getting the job done kind of thing. Not so much on the letter of the law kind of deal. But both of them have their strengths and both of them have their weaknesses. And they're both rewarding tours.
So if you were, if you were to have had a different, if your tour would have been someplace else, you would have retired earlier?
Yeah, I was at my 19, 20-year mark, or 20-year, 22 mark, I was at Navy Region Hawaii, and it was a public affairs tour. And that's really not my cup of tea. So if it was another tour that they offered me similar to that, I definitely would have put in my retirement papers and said, you know, I'm done. But the fact that it was combat camera, it gave me a chance to get more out into the field and less behind the desk. That's the reason why I stayed for a couple more years, you know.
So how much was it really just that Navy Region Hawaii one that was more desk work, or did you have another tour that was more like that, or did you do a lot of field work?
Most of my tours have been not necessarily chained to a desk. So I worked in Navy Region Hawaii for a couple of years. I worked on the PAO staff, public affairs staff there. And that was a lot of, you know, newspaper stuff and dealing with local media and international media and even Hollywood. We worked with Universal Studios, and we helped put out that movie, Battleship, that came out a few years ago. So the producers would come to us and say, this is what we want to do. We want to use your ships for X, Y, and Z, and we'd have to go get approval and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we were liaisons there, but there was a lot of desk work there that was not really my cup of tea. So I was more, I enjoyed my Navy career more when I was out in the field doing stuff than when I was at the desk. So there are people that enjoy that kind of stuff, and then there are people that don't. And I'm one of those that doesn't enjoy that. And I don't want to sit in that spot if there's someone else that could do that job better than me, you know?
So, let's see here. So when you mentioned that when you, like in the beginning when you were like on leave, you would come back to Missoula. What did you do when you, did you still do that kind of like in these more recent years of being on tour? Or?
So my first couple of tours, I would come home for Thanksgiving. I'd come home for hunting season, that kind of stuff. And then as you get older, you know, life happens, deployments happen. So there was a few years where I wasn't able to come back, but I've been back in Montana around November, December timeframe for quite a few years. The only times that I didn't make it back here was if I was deployed or at some school or something. So I made it a point to come back here on my leave. You know, a lot of people take their vacations and go to Hawaii or Bahamas or something like that, and I'd been to some of those places and I was like, yeah, that's cool, but I would rather go back and see my friends and see my family and stuff. So I used my vacation time to come back here, and I did come back here more than any other place.
Let's see. Just want to see if there's anything that I'm supposed to cover for this here. Some of these kind of like apply more to like World War II, like if you were drafted and stuff like that. So
yep.
Doesn't really apply here, but let's see. So have you, I know you just recently retired, but are you planning on being involved with like the Veterans Office here on campus or anything like that, or talking to like anyone who is interested in joining the Navy, or do you have any plans on kind of staying connected to that, or are you kind of looking at a new chapter in your life?
I have just recently retired, and I'm not looking to sever all ties from the military, but I'm not also looking to be heavily involved either. You know, I've got friends that now have kids that are to that age where they're thinking about joining the military. I definitely will give them any advice that they want. I am involved in the Vet Center over here on the University of Campus, a member of the VFW. So I'll stay involved a little bit, but I'm also at a point where I think it's time for a new chapter in my life. But the Navy was a huge part of my life, so I'm not going to turn my back on it. I'm not going to cut ties. That is a lot of how I view the world today is because of the military. And, you know, if there's opportunities where I can give back or I can help someone avoid the mistakes that I did or to get a leg up, by all means, I'm willing to help them out.
So how about a lot of your friends that were you were in the Navy with or your partner, John Parker? Is he still in the military or is he retired as well?
It's funny because you have friends that are higher ranking than you when you're in the military, and you have friends that are the same rank or lower than you. And as you start to get up there in the years in the service, you start to see those friends that were higher ranking than you start to retire and move on. And now I'm one of those guys that's retired, and my friends are now starting to come up on retirement age or service. So, you know, I'll get every now and then I'll get an invite to one of their retirements. And it's kind of funny because I think back to when we were 20-something kids, you know, I'm like, man, we would never make it to retirement. You know, it's kind of surreal to see those things come in the mail, you know. So-and-so is retiring after, you know, 20 years and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, a lot of them are starting to retire, and it's kind of funny.
Was there ever a time that you, like, seriously considered, like, not continuing your service, like, earlier on, not in the last couple of years, but kind of when you are having a hard day or anything like that?
There were definitely times in the military where I wanted nothing else but to get out of the military. And especially my first tour, that was the hardest for me. I was what they called undesignated. So I didn't have a job specialty. In the Army, they call it an MOS. But in the Navy, I was undesignated. So I got all the jobs that nobody else wanted, you know. I was the low man on the totem pole. I was the newest guy, you know, so there were a lot of days where I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. How many more years do I have to do this? When I was on the Constellation, I was my job for like 9 or 10 months was to stare at this metal wall, in the Navy call them bulkheads, and make sure it doesn't catch on fire. Because somebody was welding on the other side. And these were like 8-hour shifts. And I'm like, oh my goodness, what am I doing? I was this, you know, 19-year-old punk. That first tour was really tough, you know. And because of my lack of planning, I had lots of great tours after that, you know. I like to think that I learned from my lack of planning on that first tour and my other duty assignments were because I sought those people out and tried to get there. But yeah, my first tour was miserable. I'm just glad that I made it through there and that I did re-enlist for a second tour.
I'm pretty just on here. So kind of thinking of people who are looking into joining the military now, is there anything you think that wouldn't be a good reason to join? They told you this is why I want to join and...
If someone came up and asked me why they should not join the military, I mean, that's kind of a personal choice on their part. And whether they choose to join the military or not, what attitude they bring to that is going to make or break that. Because if they join the military for the wrong reasons, but they still have a positive outlook, they can make it into something great. But if they join for all the right reasons and they have a pessimistic attitude, it can be the worst time in their life. So every day is not going to be rosy and sunshine. So you just have to have a positive outlook on it. And don't get bogged down in the details. Always look to the bigger picture, what it's going to do for you in the long run. That would be my advice.
So do you have anything else that you'd like to mention about your time in the Navy or anything that really stands out to you that maybe made your experience different than other people's?
I've been very fortunate in my naval career on some of the assignments that I've had, but I don't think it wasn't all fate. It wasn't all luck. I did a lot of groundwork, a lot of preparatory work to get to certain places. I knew I wanted to go to Combat Camera. I sought out their senior enlisted people. And I almost harassed them to the point where I think they gave me the job so I'd leave them alone, kind of thing. But even those times where in Philadelphia or in Region Hawaii where I was having a bad day or something, I had that foundation that my folks gave me, you know, work hard, do your best, and always have a positive outlook on it. So even those days that were really horrible, I could always find something worthwhile in that day. And I think that really got me through a lot of days.
Okay, thank you. I think that's everything. Let's see. Oh, so just one more question. I think, how did you decide on the Navy compared to other branches of the military?
How did I decide on the Navy as opposed to other branches? Well, I had four really good friends in high school. One of us joined the Navy. I did. One of us joined the Coast Guard. One of us tried to join the Air Force, but they wouldn't take him because he was a little heavy. And so he joined the Marine Corps, and then the other guy went to college. I think I picked the Navy because coming from Colstrip, being a young kid, I hadn't traveled very much, you know. I think the furthest I'd been from Montana would have been like Idaho, Wyoming, or something like that, you know. So I really wanted to get as far away from town as possible, far away from Colstrip as possible. But then being in the military, you know, I got to see the world, traveled around this world several times, got to see some great places, some places I don't ever want to see again, meet some outstanding people, make some great friends, have very rewarding experiences, and some very trying times. But during the whole time, my heart was always here in Montana. So there were some great places, some great things. I think, you know, I joined out of patriotism, but that didn't lead me towards the Navy. I think the travel is what really drew me into the Navy. You know, the Army and the Marines, yeah, come join this, you can do that. But there wasn't as much traveling as the Navy promised me. And in that aspect, they definitely came through. I mean, places I've never even heard of before I got to see. So the Navy has definitely been very rewarding for me.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.